is Annie here on Solidarity Breakfast with Tobiah, and we've got Amy and Matt, and we've got also the historian Rowan Cahill on the line. G'day, Rowan. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you very much, comrades.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you. You've just put out a book called Cold War Kid, Resisting Vietnam War. And as you say in the beginning of the book, you were sort of encouraged to write a history because people would often ask you about the big battle when it came to conscription during the Vietnam War. What did you find out when you started writing this book, when you collected together the recollections?
It was as you say, I wrote it because of what I did in the 60s and 70s have made me a subject of historical interest in much later years. I'm 81 now, and what I did back in my 20s is now of historical interest, and I am entering articles and history books as a historical actor. Sometimes, people sort of get it wrong and I don't really recognise myself, so I just thought, well, I will put down my version of what happened and just leave it there.
Well, you are a historian, and one of the things that's so interesting about this book, in my view, is the way you have a way of writing recollections and then you anchor them to key historical points, which gives great clarity.
Yeah, well, I was conscripted in the first of the call-ups, and then I took oppositional views then, and that made me sort of made me an enemy of the state, and I ended up with criminalised. But if I hadn't been conscripted, you wouldn't be talking with me today, and B, I would have been another sort of person. All I wanted to be at that time was a poet and basically a glorified maritime beachcomber up on the Whitsunday Passage. Now, history intervened, tapped me on the shoulder, and I had a choice. Go along with what the Menzies government wanted me to do or take a rebel stand. And I took a rebel stand. And the point is that history is there, touching us all the time. It's touching us now with the Gaza. It's touching us now with the bloody legislations and the criminalisation of the Gaza demonstrations and stuff like that. History is always there, touching us. It's what we do when we recognise that we are part of history. We're all makers of history, even when we're just ordinary Joe Blow citizens. And we make history either by doing stuff or by saying, OK, I'll let it go on. Either way, through activism or acquiescence, we are makers of history. So, history and big events are in my life because they're touching all of us all of the time, every day.
Now, one of the things that's important too is in this book is the background. I find it fascinating you give us a little look into what Sydney looked like before it became tall buildings. You lived about 11 miles at that time away from the city centre, but you were in the northern suburbs, but you were near the bush. You were on the edge of the bush, and you learnt about the bush from your father. But your father had this other influence too, and a doorway into Colonel De Groot's new front.
Yeah, well, Dad was a teenage New Guard.
New Guard, that was it.
Yeah, New Guard activist in those in his adolescence, and subsequently there were a number of ex-policemen and ex-spooks used to sort of be within his orbit. So I don't know much about the full details of Dad's life, but Yes, he was conservative, but also he was a wonderful bushman and a wonderful teacher about, you know, self-confidence in the bush, taking care of ourselves, dealing with bushfires, teaching us about almost environmentally about the bush. So, yeah, there were good and bad aspects of his character, but yes.
But that's the point, isn't it? That's the point. It's the building of a person that then leads you to make decisions that are contrary from the conservative background that was Australia.
Yeah. And I call the book Cold War Kid for the simple reason when we were conscripted in from 1965 onwards, none of us had the right to vote. You were conscripted on the cusp of turning from 19 to 20. And in those days, you didn't get the right to vote until you were 21. So the Menzies government conscripted voteless youths, didn't consult them in any way, surprised the Australian electorate by introducing conscription overnight in November 1964. And it was the expectation that we would all just fall in line and say, yes, sir, no, sir, do what the government wanted. And that's why I spent time in the first half of the book describing being groomed to be conservative. I look upon it like the Menzies government were like bloody pedophilic groomers. And they were grooming us to be acquiescent, subservient, yes, sir, no, sir, go into the army, yes, sir, fight the communists, yes, sir, go and do some imperialist adventuring overseas, yes, sir, no problem. Well, it might have worked in the past, but it didn't work then.
Fascinating stuff.
I mean, Amy, you were talking about this, just the Adorno checklist.
Oh, yeah, the F-scale, Adorno's personality test for fascism. It's probably needs a bit of an update, but, yeah, the idea that, you know, do you have... do you believe that obedience is the most important thing that you need in a child? These sort of traits, very sort of lack of empathetic traits. I was actually just thinking when you're talking about growing up bush, you're sort of the opposite to Les Hiddens, the bush tucker man, the major Les Hiddens, because he's sort of very, he's always been very proud of his military career and his contributions to the Australian Offence Force.
So, Rowan, you went off to Sydney University, and this is also an important milestone because this, you're the first person in your family to go to university.
Yeah, well, from a very early age, and I was about six when I told my mother I wanted to write books, but I chose the wrong words. I said, Mummy, I said, when I grow up, I want to be a bookmaker. And she thought, yeah, she was very against Dad's drinking and his alcohol and some of his mates and that stuff like that. She came from a conservative church background. And when I said I want to be a bookmaker, because I wanted to make books, I write them, she thought I had picked up a bad word from Dad about gambling, you see.
And, I'd be a bookmaker.
It didn't get any better thereafter. That's all I ever wanted to do. I wanted to write. And then I remember going to a careers advisor at school, it's compulsory, and saying, oh, yes, I want to write. And he thought the only writers he knew about were journalists. He pulled out my school report cards. And I remember this bastard. He sat there across the table and he said, and you called Mr. Carl in those days. And he went, he said, oh, Mr. Carr, he said, there's nothing here that suggests you've got that ability whatsoever. Seems to me you should go in and be a clerk in the public service. And,
well, it's all history now.
Yeah. And see, in my reading thereafter, writers seem to go to university and do arts degrees. And I thought, oh, shit, that's how you do it. And so I ended up at university. I had the chance to, so I went, yeah.
Yeah, it's very exciting and would have been exciting at the time. So basically what you're saying is you're muddling along, finding, going into a whole other world, which of course going to a university is. And then of course the conscription falls upon you on your lap, and so your trajectory changes and you become an activist effectively.
Well, basically, yes, and that was a good word, muddling along. And then even when we're in activism, it was muddling along too, because the anti-war movement in 1964-65 was very small. When they put it into the history books, you tend to show the dirty great big Melbourne Moratorium marches, and they're glorious. And you do the Sydney Moratorium march, and that's glorious. And you hop up to Queensland and you show the anti-Joe Belke Peterson demonstrations, and they're great. And then you shove in some shots of the anti-apartheid movement, photographs of the next few years later, and they're terrific. And people get the idea, oh, yeah, in the 1960s, people were out there in the masses doing all this marvellous stuff. Well, in the beginning, you might as well. Yeah, I describe a scene where, in the book, where in the early days at Sydney University, there's three of us with a megaphone sprouting anti-conscription and anti-Vietnam things, and there's a dirty great big crowd of people coming towards us to go to lunch, and they give us a great big detour like we're a leper colony or something.
Hmm. Yeah.
It's an important aspect of remembering history because, I mean, one, it's, yeah, remembering the radical history of Australia, not just, you know, casting everything into the dustbin of history, saying it was all conservative rubbish, but also that these great big movements had small little beginnings, and that's the important thing to remember, even for people that are movement building today.
And a hell of a lot of activism went into building that movement. And the other thing that's important to note too, there's another book out at the same time as mine by another colleague from Newcastle. I'm from Wollongong, she's from Newcastle. But she's written a book about the New South Wales protest, and she's done a micro study of New South Wales, the anti-war movement. And she's avoided the big names and the famous names because historians tend to focus on the leaders. And you write, and they write top down accounts of protest, even sort of friendly historians. And the point is, an effective movement is masses of people who are never known to history. You know, the people who make the phone calls, who do the building, run off the leaflets, write the leaflets, raise money, do the banners. And these people don't leave paper trails. They don't leave signatures. And the mass media doesn't sort of really write about them or fix on them because they're not dramatic, they're not theatrical.
Yeah, yeah, but they believe in positive change.
And they're the people who bloody... They're the machinery, the cogs of the movement.
I think that's absolutely true. I remember in primary school when we learned about high school when we learned about the Vietnam War, we spent a long time on John Lennon and Yoko Ono. It's just like, really?
It's like... Yeah, I forget how many thousands were out there. There were 20 to 40,000 up in Sydney in the first of the moratorium marches, demonstrations outside Sydney Town Hall. The crowds were bigger in Melbourne down here. It's like, so there's thousands upon thousands of people out in the street and you write about two or three to people.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's part of your legacy, isn't it? The cohort of historians that built... radical history. It's an important thing that working class history, ordinary people history, that is the current of change, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And it's like, the poet Bertolt Brecht wrote about, famous people who built the pyramids, who did this, who did that in ancient history. Was it the great leaders who built the pyramids?
Yeah, who actually did it?
Yeah.
I mean, there's actually, I was looking at the, it's a pretty well a beautiful bronze of Matthew Flinders outside one of the churches here. And they've actually, he's standing erect on a small boat, and there's two men underneath it, which we don't see the face of, holding it up on their back. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, that's the most repulsive statue, even though it's beautifully made.
Yeah, and it's the ordinary people who actually build, create and do stuff. And once you realise as an ordinary person that you are a maker of history, either by compliance or otherwise, man, it's a liberating thought.
It sure is. There's a book launch today for Cold War Kid Resisting the Vietnam War. It's going to be at Ballum Ballum in Brunswick at 3, going to 5, and you're going to be there.
I'm going to swim down here.
Thanks for talking to us this morning, Rowan.
It's a very, very pleasure. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.